Oh, good evening. I apologize for being late. I got a telephone call. It was a family drama. All three of my children were talking to each other. It's one of the wives said they should call me, so suddenly I was in this little turmoil thing, and it's all fine, but it was late. First of all, I wanted to tell you about Dan's blog. Have you all seen Dan's blog? It's terrific. It's wonderful. It's on floatingzendo.org, and it's called Dan's blog, and it's very funny and wonderfully written. And just all the food he's eating and doesn't know what it is, and the language that he doesn't know how to say, but he's learning it. And it sounds like he's having a wonderful time and making the most of being there. And he's sharing it all in a wonderful way. So I encourage you all to check it out. We're on the ninth chapter, the ninth paragraphs. I don't know what to call these. Sections, I guess. And next week will be the last one. So we'll have to be thinking about what else to do. There's so many things that we could choose. Things that we've done before or things that we've never done. But think about it for yourselves. Think if there's something that would be interesting to spend some weeks on slowly, like we've been doing this. So number 9 comes after number 8, which is about the time being having him raise his eyebrows. So it comes along with another teaching about the time being. Shizian, Zen Master Guixin, is the heir of Shushan, a Dharma descendant of Linji. Linji is the Rinzai master that established the Rinzai Zen. One day he taught the assembly, "For the time being, mind arrives, but words do not. For the time being, words arrive, but mind does not. For the time being, both mind and words arrive. For the time being, neither mind nor words arrive." Then Dogen goes on to say, "Both mind and words are the time being. Both arriving and not arriving are the time being. When the moment of arriving has not appeared, the moment for not arriving is here. Mind is a donkey, words are a horse." This refers to a dialogue. "What is the meaning of Buddha Dharma?" Lin Yung said, "While the donkey has not yet left, the horse has arrived. Mind is a donkey and words are a horse. Having already arrived is words, and not having left is mind. Arriving is coming, not arriving is not yet. The time being is like this. Arriving is overwhelmed by arriving, but not by not arriving. Not arriving is overwhelmed by not arriving, but not by arriving. Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind. Words overwhelm words and see words. Overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming and sees overwhelming. Overwhelming is nothing but overwhelming. This is time. As overwhelming is caused by you, There is no overwhelming that is separate from you. Thus you go out and meet someone. Someone meets someone. You meet yourself. Going out meets going out. If these are not the actualization of time, they cannot be thus. Mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point. Words are the moment of going beyond, unlocking the barrier. Arriving is the moment of casting off the body. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this, while being free from just this. In this way, you must endeavor to actualize the time being. As Taigen said, this is like sitting under a wave of the ocean that just washes over. Overwhelming, overwhelms, overwhelming. Yes, indeed, it does. It certainly does. And yet, there's a real truth in here. So there are different translations of this. Nishijima's talk about it is that, I'm not sure I even want to go into that. I've been reading about music in Science News. They had a few weeks ago a whole section on it about how music opens up the mind and the areas in the mind. They used to think it was just one area in the mind that was music, and now they find it's all over. And it activates the same as language. Activates the same parts of the brain, and they're trying to figure out in a scientific way the meaning of this, and whether it's an evolutionary advantage to have music lighting up our brain, or whether it's just a sort of sideways glitch that happened. But when I read it in terms of this, and how we know what we know, how we are mind, how our mind goes out to meet the mind of others, how the mind opens up to language, and how language itself opens up all the doors. As he say, knocks down the barrier, unlocking the barrier. Mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point, this point, this point. And it's not a passive thing, as we've been saying all through with this. It's the full dynamic activity of life itself as it goes out to meet itself. That's what Dogen is talking about here. So, sometimes it's thought that meditation is about achieving a place where all the words go away, and it's just serene and peaceful, and everything is the way it should be. But that's not what Dogen is talking about. He's talking about how it is and how we are. And words are us. Words themselves are Buddha nature. And we know what a powerful thing they are. in our life and how much terrible damage they can do, how poisonous they can be, and what stupendous miracles they can wring out of the worst situations by saying the right thing at the right time. It's that kind of energy, that kind of dynamic that he's talking about here. It's how we do ourself, how we be ourself. This itself is the fundamental point. And sometimes it is overwhelming. And that's part of it too. So we don't need to say, oh, this isn't the way it's supposed to be, because we don't know. But we do know that we are here. We are present. Sometimes we're absent. So we go and we come. And he's talking about that too, when we try to be present and our mind is drifted off somewhere, and then we come back. Oh, here we are, right here. No place else. All of those ways are our way, our Buddha way. So if arriving which Nishijima calls absence. Absence, he says, is the presence in the moment of casting off the body. Absence is the moment of being one with just this, while being free from just this. So, being one with just this and free from it is being so completely absorbed. It's the samadhi of slicing an onion. It's being so completely absorbed that you're not thinking, oh, I am slicing this onion, or look what a good job I am doing. You disappear because you're just slicing the onion in a most complete and fundamental way. And as we sit, we do the same. We come to the cushion, and it's self-motivated, but at a certain point, the whole thing is sitting with us. And as he says, mind and body drop off, meaning we aren't thinking about ourselves anymore. We're not figuring ourselves out and identifying ourselves. We're just, the whole thing is breathing with us and living with us, as in fact it is. So Dogen says we're acting out Buddha nature. We're not finding it. We're not even making it up. Our activity itself is our Buddha nature, is the Buddha nature. So Katagiri said, your daily life is exactly the same as the source of human life. Being in the stream of life is exactly the same as being at the source of time. We have to stand up in the dynamic working process at the pivot of nothingness and do something with wholeheartedness. And of course we have to know what to do. What shall I do at this pivot of nothingness? But actually every moment The doing is doing us at the same time that we do something. And if we're willing to be consciously a part of this dynamic, then suddenly the whole thing is working together. So Dogen said, to say if the time arrives is tantamount to declaring that the time has already arrived. How can you doubt this? You may entertain a doubt about time. Be that as it may, witness Buddha nature's arrival. You should know that if the time arrives, as understood in this manner, every moment of the 24 hours of the day does not pass in vain. The if arrives is construed as the already arrived. Otherwise, if the time arrives would mean Buddha nature never arrives. For this reason, since the time has already arrived, Buddha nature is unmistakably present here and now. So that's Dogen's continual teaching all through his life, that practice and enlightenment are one thing. We don't practice in order to accomplish enlightenment or Buddha nature or some kind of spiritual holy achievement. That the practice itself is Buddha nature itself. So that when we sit, although it doesn't look like anything very fancy is happening, something is happening. And when we stand up from sitting, although we look like perfectly ordinary everyday people, still something is happening. So that as we practice, the arriving and the not arriving are continually informing our activity as we wholeheartedly put ourselves, our life, into our life, moment by moment, without knowing what the outcome is going to be, except, of course, that, and it's important not to forget that there is an end to each life. And that this life, too, will make room for the next generation. So in that view, it's a very beautiful coming and going, arriving and not arriving. There are many levels to all of this. So that when we walk in meditation, we're arriving. But as you can experience, we've already arrived, of course. We are already arriving, we are there. But it's in process, constant, continual process. From the time that the first sperm got to the egg and made us, it's been unfolding in time, as time itself. It's amazing. I was looking straight at that rose as I was sitting, and it's opening. Even as I was watching it, it was opening. It was so much out of this. I thought, wow, it's listening. It's feeling what we're doing. So that's what I brought. Must have questions, comments. Yes.
Could you read, there's a part where he says we must endeavor to actualize, and I don't have the last, I think it was near the end of that, at the end of the whole thing. But
yes, it is the very last sentence. I'll read that paragraph. Mind is the moment of actualizing the fundamental point. Words are the moment of going beyond, unlocking the barrier. Arriving is the moment of casting off the body. Not arriving is the moment of being one with just this, while being free from just this. In this way, you must endeavor to actualize the time being. So no attaching to fulfillment.
Just endeavor to actualize. I mean, that to me, that brings sort of, there was something early, I was listening to some of the talks that I missed, but about exertion.
Mm-hmm.
That if you do not exert yourself in this moment, nothing.
Yes.
Nothing can happen. Nothing can be somehow. The whole idea of you must endeavor to actualize it just is such a powerful. It's just this, just endeavor to be this moment.
Mm-hmm. That yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Copen always said, "It's all up to you." And then we think, oh, can't somebody else do this for me? But no, it's all up to each one of us.
And that's the practice.
That is the practice. Yeah.
I was going to ask him, how does this relate to the final words of the Parsukha Gatagati Parasambhavi Bodhisattva, which is generally translated, although there may be variations, as gone completely beyond rejoice, wake. But then when he said awakening is, or arriving is, letting go of everything, or going away, this is sort of like, you know, it sounds like double talking. It seems like there's a negation in the message.
Well, it's no attachment.
Gata is arriving, just by yeah. Instead of going to the other shore, arriving at the other shore, I'm just kind of going by with this.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. You know, if you're arriving, you've already got there. Or there wouldn't be any there to get to. So gate is the same thing. You're supposedly going to the other shore, but there is no other shore. The other shore is this shore.
Instead of arriving, letting go of, I think it's putting go of the text in front of me, arriving is...
Dropping off mind and body?
Dropping off mind and body.
Yes. Casting off. Now, Nishijima uses presence instead of arriving and absence for not arriving, which I think confuses it somewhat. It becomes more well. I don't get it exactly.
Well, it's hard. I mean, I often thought of this. You know, they're supposed to get to this place, the other shore. You know, that's the whole place to think of. That's what they're trying to do on the desire.
Yeah.
But this is interesting because he brings it all back and it turns it back around.
Yes.
you're not really, it's just arriving, it's not going up somewhere.
Yes. It's like Buddha's first teaching, where he talks about our suffering and nirvana as how suffering can be overcome. And then the way, which is not some wonderful magic button or some other world we can go to, is just living right. It's just really plain, simple, ordinary, everyday, right living. Right speech, right thought, right behavior, right livelihood, right meditation. Very simple. Anything else? It's hard to talk about
what I really like is the fact that I've been reading Doug for over 30 years, and for the most part, for a good number of years, it was just among several students who read. And then you start seeing Dogen's name attached to a lot of different other teachers outside of Soto, that these translations are being discussed by a lot of other teachers. Mm. And I just find that so interesting. Mm. If you go on somebody else's blog or something, Amma Surya Das is using Dogen to illustrate a point, or Stephen Batchelor, or somebody like that. It's very interesting how his writing has really been studied. So, I remember reading when I was in my 30s that Ryokan had, in one of his poems, he talks about falling asleep after having cried, something by Dogen. And I went, whoa, I've got to read this guy. So I guess Dogen's history was that nobody read him except in the monasteries. Not even all that many people knew about him in the monasteries. And he was kind of brought back,
yes,
as it were, by a teacher.
Yes. Not so long ago. They used to bring his writings out and air them out once a year. They would take them and open them all up and walk around. Each monk would have some, and they would walk around in the hondo and expose it to the air, and then wrap them all carefully back up and put them away. Nobody read them. They honored them, but they didn't read them. And I think in the 20s, so not that far long away, that somebody got interested in them. And by that time, Wittgenstein and some of the European philosophers were saying pretty much the same kind of things. They didn't quite go far enough. They never went quite as far as Dogen did, but Hegel. And
I know Norman Fisher makes a lot of comments regarding Dogen and Martin Luther.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we've already come to it in the West. We just didn't. Martin Buber especially, I and Thou.
So how did you make the decision to read Ujjayi? Well, How do you make these decisions as a group?
Well, I decided this one because nobody had anything in particular, and it's always interested me and scared me a little bit. So I thought, well, that's a good thing to do. See if I can.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Yeah, I have to pick up a book and read the, I mean, I have a reading of the book. I have a, you know, I pick it up and read it. This is so good. Understand, it's so hard to just read and get that very book.
Yeah.
Having it read out loud and talking about it, the oral time you explain it, you're benefiting. Meaning that would probably escape me from reading it before I fall asleep.
Yeah, you really can't read him that way very easily. It's better to sit first and then chant the unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma chant, and then sit down and read it. So that's the only thing that's happening. And then treat the book with, you know, care. He's still here. He's still among us. It's so that's why words are so incredible. His whole mind lives in those words, and now they live in us. And as we live and speak and write, then it's traveling and moving on. Arriving. It's the wonder of us. Well, let's sit till 8:00.